as he presents to us today.
It was a deeply moving experience for us to worship in your beautiful new sanctuary. We had not seen that. It wasn't here when we were here last. This is the third occasion I've been privileged to meet with you at this particular forum. In your church, you have beautiful copies of the New International Version, and I want to begin by reading what I find is a very challenging passage from the pen of the Apostle Paul in 1 Thessalonians. Be joyful always. Pray continually. Give thanks in all circumstances, for this is God's will in Christ Jesus. Isn't that an upbeat challenge? Then he says, do not put out the Spirit's fire. Isn't that a good way of describing the Holy Spirit? Do not put out the Spirit's fire. Do not treat prophecies with contempt. Test everything. Hold on to the good. Avoid every kind of evil. He says, test everything. So I grew up in that kind of an Adventist home, suffused with faith and wonderful stories of the past. I was placed in charge of the memories of the church, tens of thousands of pages of primary documents. And people wrote to me constantly, and I tried to answer. And my division president and secretary told me of their concern. They said, Arthur, we have a problem. People write to us and we answer their letters. They write to you. We answer their letters and you answer their letters, and your answers are different from ours. Well, I said, brethren, you put me in charge of the memories of the church. And I am trying to answer in view of all of the information that is in my charge. There was the genesis of my struggle, my conflict, that would reorientate my whole life. At a conference in Portland, Maine, 3 weeks ago, in the group of 66, or I think it should be 67 people that were there, there was Jonathan Butler, there was William Peterson, Eric Anderson, Ben MacArthur, Ronald Numbers, Ronald Grable. Do those names ring any bells for you? These were people that laid the foundation for the modern phase of Adventist studies. I'm going to quit rambling like this in a few minutes and give you my report, give you some remarks, and then ask for your input. But before I do that, I need to briefly say why Seventh-day Adventism got into this era of conflict. Because we had a whole lot of new information to deal with. A lot of new information. We had primary sources for the first time in substantial quantities. I graduated with a Bachelor of Arts in Theology from an Adventist institution. And I knew practically nothing firsthand from Adventist history. I learned it all from books, which I valued. But you cannot understand a movement like ours unless you read the primary documents. What did our pioneers actually say? What did they say when they thought no one was listening? What did they write in their periodicals? How did that develop? What changes took place? How then do we understand the history that we were taught? Seventh-day Adventists were progressing fairly nicely, thank you very much. Ellen White had started us in 1844, moving from great disappointment toward what was, by her death, great certainty about the essence of our faith and our place in the world. And when she died, and we had to live without a voice of God amongst us, we elevated her spiritual gift to the extent that she was 100 years ahead of all of scientific medicine. She had the definitive understanding of what caused volcanoes. She knew about the crust of the earth and 1,000 other questions that we needed to know. And we believe that she spoke with absolute authority in everything, no matter what it was. So that by 1970, she had moved us from great disappointment to great certainty to greater certainty. In fact, she told us what the Bible said. We couldn't be quite sure ourselves, but if she told us, we had certainty. And suddenly, we realized that the fundamentalist framework in which we had cast her work didn't fit. Here was a person who used the writings of other authors copiously. A person who sometimes grasped for an illustration from her culture and brought it into her writings, and it was scientifically wrong. We had a great many surprises. So quickly, continuing our graph, after 1970, our greater certainty became a great bereavement as we lost a sense of who our mother was and who we were and how everything fitted together. You see, we were doing so nicely. F.D. Nicol had written Ellen G. White and Her Critics in 1951. He'd demolished, he'd put to flight the armies of the aliens. So effectively, we felt secure, invincible, and suddenly we had all this new. She did teach the shut door for years. She wrote it so plainly in the early period that all of those statements had to be dropped out because of the problem. She did teach about amalgamation of man and beast. And Uriah Smith defended her by saying, naturalists can't tell where the animal ends and the human begins. This was shocking for us. And we found that she not only grew, but she changed. She could leave beside some ideas about Jesus and direct us toward the heart of the Christian message by the 1890s. All kinds of wonderful. This is the most creative person in Seventh-day Adventism. And her best friends have worked so hard to make her the most constricting person in Seventh-day Adventism. Let me just... This brother here comes to me. What's that thing you had in your hand there a minute ago? He came to this meeting with this, various papers. Now, this is, some of this is heavy stuff, some of it's very light. But you can get, if you want, a few dozen papers on the internet, just if you put in Arthur Patrick, Ellen White into Google, it'll throw up all sorts of stuff. If you want to go directly to SDANet, you can get a lot of these sorts of papers. SDANet.org at issue. All one word. Let me just say a word about how I got into this. You see, Jim Katz invited me down here to the San Diego Forum to re-present something I had presented to the group that I most value association with. This is called the ASRS Directory. About 360 people, most of whom, like Kendra Holowiak, have earned a doctorate in some aspect, in its broadest sense, of Adventist studies. If I need to understand a tricky passage in the Book of Revelation, I don't go to my plumber. I go to people like Kendra or John Pauline, who have given their lives to studying and understanding Revelation. If I want to understand the wonders of the Old Testament, I go to some of these people. There are hundreds of them, and they have earned their credentials with very hard work. When I'm in medical need, I don't go to somebody that doesn't know about that problem. And you and I need to learn to rely on people that have dedicated their lives to certain aspects of God's will and purpose. In other words, this is the way some people handle the problem. They're going along very nicely at Seventh-day Adventist, and then some new information comes. If it's a small amount, they just incorporate it into their system of understanding and keep on going. But if it is a large amount of new information, and that's what happened to us in the 1970s, there were huge bushels of it being dumped on the Adventist table. And some people said, "We have never heard that before." Brethren, we are under attack. Stand firm. Be resolute. Budge not an inch. Put to flight the armies of the aliens. And they revert in a backlash to what they know to be true. And we Adventists have liked to call that tradition. Right? Ever heard the word? Other people say, "We have never heard this before. We have been deceived. Let us get out of here." Other people say, "What is this information? Can we establish its veracity? What does it mean anyway? How does it shape our understanding of faith?" And so they go through the careful, evaluative sorting process. Yes, Ellen White, along with her contemporaries, did teach that the door of mercy was shut. She did believe that no more sinners would be saved. She did believe that if we fell off that straight and narrow path into the dark and wicked world below, we could never get back onto the path again, and in fact, we would be as lost as all the wicked world which God had rejected. And you could go on and on. But what does this mean? It means that like the disciples, who still didn't know what the kingdom was when Jesus was about to ascend to heaven, needed to walk with him day by day until they did understand. It was a growing experience. It's an experience of going from little light to greater light, from no responsibility, no mission, to world mission, to global mission. And so you put it in context, and that is so important. So that's what I've been on about the past, especially since 1979, and I'm so excited about this conference because it's going to transpose all of this into a new key. We had two lovely, wonderfully skilled musicians in church this morning. And you know when they're playing and they suddenly transpose something into a new key? Or Ellen White would say that the angels sing a note higher. I think they're singing a note higher about Portland 2009. Now I have said a little more than I planned to say. I'm going to be quite precise for 30 minutes giving you my report. Then a few remarks and your turn will come. Ellen White studies Portland 2009 and beyond. Here are the nuts and bolts. The conference held in Portland, Maine, 22 to 25 October 2009, may well transpose a long-standing discussion about Ellen White into a new key. As a working conference, it followed a long series of forward initiatives taken in various parts of the world. For instance, effective research into the Millerite origins of Sabbatarian Adventism began its slow development with Everett Dick's doctoral study 1930. The process accelerated with a conference on the rise of Adventism in the 1970s. It matured with the subsequent publication of a series of substantial volumes. This much on a shelf now. This is an established, matured discipline. And we met some of the key non-Adventists that have contributed to that at the Portland Conference. Ellen White studies, as a serious but still unnamed discipline, began a new and torturous course in 1970, when trained historians began to achieve better access to archival facilities. Adventist studies is a named academic discipline became available as an accredited option for PhD students at Andrews University during 1993. More recently, state and federal authorities in Australia have accredited PhD programs in education, health, history, and theology at Avondale College. And if you think you might like to come and study there, click onto the internet and there's the annotated guide that we've prepared if you want to study in this way. I think we've even got a slide on our screen that will help us. Yes, if you could get that. How would you go about this? Avondale's struggle since 2006 to develop Adventist studies as a doctoral option may be assessed with the help of this 20-page document on the net. And in here I've placed short descriptions of what I think are 34 of the most relevant doctoral dissertations that you would get some clue from as to where Adventist studies is going, if you can go on to the... This is just the outline of it, and then the next page is what I want you to notice. If you're going to engage in religious studies, you might do it from a point of view of history or comparative religion. You might focus on a particular religion like Buddhism or Hinduism or Christianity or Islam. But take Christianity. All right, these are some options: historical studies, biblical studies, theological studies, pastoral studies, missiological studies, cultural studies. And you can use those approaches for Anglican studies, Baptist, Methodist, but our focus is Adventist studies. And you're going to do it in a way that is transparent, honestly looking at sources, seeking to gain access to all of the sources and to thoroughly analyse them. So, in the light of the Portland event, I think the future of this kind of study looks very promising indeed. The future of the effervescent dialogue and dialectic about Ellen White has never seemed brighter. The perceived success of a conference that convened at Andrews University during 2007 encouraged at least one of the organisers to plan this particular conference. The 2007 event focused on questions on doctrine, the most discussed, the most controversial volume Adventists have ever published. That conference sought to hear the variety of voices that wanted to express convictions about that book. And it seemed such a good idea when it was over that the organisers of this conference in Portland decided to try something far more venturesome. I need to acknowledge that this was to some extent a child of the Adventist, Seventh-day Adventist, the Association of Seventh-day Adventist Historians. They've been discussing this possibility since 1998. And at last, they brought it to birth. If you want to know about the conference, the nuts and bolts, more than I'm giving you now, you need to go to Ellen White Project with the help of Google, and you'll get a wealth of information. I want to compare and contrast what happened in 2009 with two other similar but very different events. Go back to the year 1919. Ellen White has died in 1915. The church is becoming conscious of the movement in Christianity that we call fundamentalism. They were caught with the possibilities of the prophetic conferences that they were seeing occurring around them, and they got together in conversation. There were not many of them: administrators, Bible teachers, history teachers, three kinds of persons. And there were eight or nine stenographers that tried to take down what they were saying. Sometimes the general conference would say 60 pages, excise that, we're not going to record that. But we have 1,200 or 1,300 pages of what these people were saying. And there were people like Daniels and Prescott and Lacey who had spent years working with Ellen White, knew intimately how she did her work. They had helped her with the revision of the Great Controversy. They had helped her with the writing of The Desire of Ages. They had helped her with the difficult passages in the Old Testament that needed unraveling for prophets and kings, and so on. For years, for decades. And now they're talking together as to how to understand her work and how to apply it. But people are outside of the room constructing pamphlets to destroy the credibility of those people. And if you read major books today, I can give you more than 20 of them. They are built upon the idea that apostasy in the Seventh-day Adventist Church began to flower in 1919 with A.G. Daniels leading the charge. Whereas those brethren were simply giving us an understanding of the real or the historical Ellen White that would be submerged as we moved into that era of greater certainty. To the extent that that conference would be almost totally erased from the memory of the Seventh-day Adventist movement until Spectrum published the transcripts in 1978. What a surprise that our leaders thought like that. This was the real Ellen White, the historical Ellen White, not the manufactured Ellen White of the mythology of that 50 years, that half century, when our movement retreated into the ranks of fundamentalism. That's one conference that you need to understand, and Michael Campbell will help you with his dissertation. And if you don't have access to his dissertation, try some of my short analyses of his work that you can get from the net. The second conference that we need to understand was in 1982. When that wealth of new information was on the Adventist desk and we had an international prophetic guidance workshop with about the same number of attendees as there and there, who actually verified that all of this was for real. And I went back to Australia from that conference full of enthusiasm to share the healing, redemptive understandings of that conference. But my division president and supervisor said, no, this material must not be shared. And so we had that crisis. We lost about a third of our ministers, with one reason for that, the conflict that we were experiencing over Ellen White. And it was tough. How different was Portland 2009? Here, it was dangerous to say what you knew. Here, it was still impossible to be open and frank about the documents. Whereas in Portland, we had 21 authors, assigned excellent topics, and those people in the main are some of the keenest minds in Ellen White studies, some of the people whose names I mentioned before. But in addition to that, We had 42 respondents. So what happens? I write my chapter on Ellen White as author. Come to the conference, and my chapter gets 3/4 of an hour, which means that I can make a few introductory statements because people are supposed to have read it already. A few introductory statements if I want to, about the task, the purpose, how I went about it, whatever. And then my two respondents have prepared from 2 to 14 pages, no guidelines, just whatever they want to say. And they have 10 minutes each to summarise what they've written down. It's not going to go away because it's written down, but they have 10 minutes to get the message over orally. I can then say, make brief remarks, but then there are 66 other people, each with access to a microphone to hold me to account. This is healthy. This is what accredited education is about. This is the kind of transparency that builds well for the future. I've kind of summarised those first two conferences, and then I come to a line in my notes that says, how different from here and here was the 2009 conference. Interestingly, the number of the participants in the conferences held during 1990, 1982 and 2009 are similar, but the composition of the group vastly contrasts with the all-Adventist attendees of these two. The official list of participants given to us in Portland has 66 names on it, but they missed one. About a third of them are persons of non-Adventist background, mostly well-known authors who have written effectively about American religious history. There in that room were people whose books I'd been reading for years. And now we were colleagues at the same table. Ruth Alden Doan, Anne Taves, Grant Wacker, people like this, Laura Vance. A wonderful opportunity. The rest of the attendees were raised as Adventists or embraced the faith before writing doctoral dissertations or publishing studies that in some way illumine the life and writings of Ellen White. A number of the attendees contributed substantively to the intense discussions of the 1970s and 1980s before the church marginalised their participation. 15 other participants are current employees who are contributing to the present understanding of Ellen White's life and writings due to their background as historians. A smaller number of professionals were present from such disciplines as biblical studies, like Dr. Holowiak, Dr. Pauline. By the way, there are 4 blogs on John Pauline's site at Loma Linda University that you'll find very interesting as he reflects on the conference. Biblical studies, theology, I ought to mention too, Old Testament, Alden Thompson was there, and sociology. We had at least 2 front rank sociologists, and their work is very important for us to understand the way the Lord has led us and taught us in our past history. I want to offer you 3 reasons why the Portland event was successful. These don't exhaust what needs to be said, but they point the way. I hope your questions will lead us to a lot of further conclusions. First of all, Credible historiography thrives on effective access to primary sources by competent professionals. History is not invented. It's not written in a vacuum. It depends on primary sources, and if you've got skilled people using those, the outcome is likely to be even a bit better. Adventist studies in general, and its subset Ellen White studies in particular, are now quite thoroughly democratized. You people on your home computers have access to materials that I had to travel from one hemisphere to the other a mere 25 or 30 years ago. You've got a wealth of material there. Access to resources for effective study could be prevented by an administrative decree as recently as this conference here. That is impossible now. An unquantifiable array of primary documentation is available to anyone who has a computer connected to the internet. And if you really want to test that statement out, log on to the site that Bert Holowiak of General Conference Archives supervises, and you will be absolutely amazed at what you can discover about your religious history. And if you feel short of guidance, go to the bibliographies of Gary Shearer at Pacific Union College, and you'll be amazed at what you can find. If acclaimed doctoral dissertations, if refereed journal articles, if scholarly books are a measure of competence, many of the historians who participated at the Portland Conference are of world status. Obviously, their research reaches far beyond the capabilities of the internet, and any claim they made at the conference was subject to immediate scrutiny by colleagues well versed in the matters that surfaced in the lively discussion periods. Such a climate for research and dialogue was beyond our wildest dreams as recently as 1982. The conference revealed that a wide consensus has developed regarding the historical Ellen White. A present need is for effective interpretation to further develop along the lines of the scholarly volume that I believe will surface hopefully later next year, perhaps published by Oxford University Press or a similar publisher. Oxford is very interested in the project. You know that such a publisher will never commit itself till it has read the script. The second thing I want you to notice is that the conference highlighted crucial chapter topics that focused the efforts of those 21 authors. At the foundation of the assigned chapters was, of course, a biographical sketch. You would expect that. And then there was a focus on the historiographical work that's been done since 1844 to the present. Next, the chapters looked at the religious culture within which Ellen White ministered and the influences that shaped her work and the growth of the Sabbatarian community, and how she used her testimonies to build a new denomination. One specialist contextualised Ellen White's early religious experiences. Another depicted her engagement with health issues. Others treated subjects as complex as race relations or mind and metaphysics. Yet another offered perspectives on her attitudes toward popular culture. Larger contexts for the conference were provided on the first night by a scholar who's written a Pulitzer Prize-winning biography of Harriet Beecher Stowe. And then on the second night by a scholar who's writing a new biography of Billy Graham. So we had two models, one a woman writing about a 19th century woman, and one a man writing about a major figure of the 20th century. So the way they were going about their biographies was very interesting to us indeed. A high point for me was a worship experience on the second main day of the conference when Dr. Holowiak gave us a homily entitled Joy in the Morning. A beautiful exposition of a psalm that you love, but that as so aptly applied to our historical experience. A New Testament scholar bringing an insight that enriched the conference wonderfully. Next, we were led to consider Adventist understandings and misunderstandings of Ellen White, her engagement with American society, her theology, her eschatology, her roles as institution builder, author, public speaker. Other chapter authors explored Ellen White's perceptions of women's roles and education. Probably we fall short most of all in contextualizing Ellen White's life and writings as a 19th century woman. We need to do better work there. The reflective concluding hour of the conference began with a six-member panel whose members addressed the theme, Ellen White Looking Forward. It would be difficult to see how the conference organisers could have packed more content into this event. It's obvious, though, that all the important data can never be compressed within the covers of any one book. There's a lot in the future. You know, I believe within the next 2 years, you will have access to four important new books. The Encyclopedia, the study of all of the people to whom testimonies were written, a new volume being edited by Merlin Burt, and the one that will grow from the Portland Conference. So good things are ahead. Those are two reasons why this was a successful conference, in my view. The third reason, an effective dialogical process pervaded the conference. Here we were in conversation with some of the best religious historians in your country, names you know well. Two specialists were appointed to respond to each chapter, as I've said, one an Adventist, one a non-Adventist. Chapter authors had the option to comment briefly about the scripts as I have outlined. They'd been circulated to all the attendees before the conference, and then the respondents shared their written summaries of their conclusions. Then there was that crossfire of comment for at least 10 minutes in each 45 minutes. I really appreciated that, as roving microphones facilitated our communication. In this way, the formal conference proceedings spilled over into the hallways, the dining room, the streets, and for some non-Adventists, the bar in Portland. I think they drank lemon squash. The conference maximized the exchange of perceptions between two groups of people. People who had sought for decades to understand Ellen White's life and writings, and acknowledged specialists in American religious history. My argument here is that unlike any earlier era in Adventism, adequate primary sources are now readily available for serious study. The whole thing has been democratized. The Adventist community has developed women and men who are able to offer competent leadership in the daunting process of interpreting these extensive documents coherently. Further, the conference organizers planned effective communication between specialists in Ellen White studies and other scholars whose lives are devoted to understanding American religious history in its broad context. These three considerations facilitated a constructive outcome for the Portland event. A concluding observation. The organisers of the 2009 conference have given the Adventists and the scholarly world a fresh opportunity to foster a mature, sustainable understanding of Ellen White amongst believers in the wider community, especially that of North America, and us as believers. From a handful of disappointed Millerites, the Second Advent movement is now a world religion, approaching 16 million baptized members. Will we, without further delay, transcend the unnecessary conflicts and the false assumptions about our church's mother that have been pervasive and destructive in the past? That's something that I think grows from the little paper that went up on the Adventist Today site on Tuesday. It was already on the Adventist site. On reparenting Seventh-day Adventists, you can log on to it. And it simply summarizes the past 40 years, I hope usefully. Will we invest a commitment comparable to that of Ellen White in spreading the message of grace revealed in the incarnation of Jesus Christ and the message of hope focused in his second coming? Seventh-day Adventism is, above all, a global family with its eyes set toward the truth as it is in Jesus. You recognize that refrain? One of her favorite ones. The Alpha and the Omega of our faith has too often been supplanted by controversies that are no longer necessary. Now that the facts about the way the Lord has led us in his teaching in our past history are so freely available to us. That's my report. I would like to just offer a few reflections, and then I think, Jim, you have something cooling and refreshing for us. I'd like to suggest, I've got pages of these kinds of notes, but I'd like to just quickly suggest seven things you might like to think about. The challenge to balance Ellen White's spiritual gift and the spiritual gifts of the community that she helped to found and cherish and mature. You see, her spiritual gift was meant to be in relation with the gifts of God's people. When we so elevated her spiritual gift in that 50-year period, things got out of balance. Your spiritual gifts and mine were largely submerged, and now we're getting back to the potential of balance. That's one point. Each of these could be a paper on its own, but I'll just throw them out for what they might or might not be worth. It's clear that we have been deeply ignorant about some things that would have helped us greatly to use her work effectively. Just one illustration. As a young pastor, I believed that in the Desire of Ages I had the definitive description of the events in the life of Christ from his birth to his ascension. My mother gave me a beautiful wide margin Bible. I bought a mapping pen, Indian ink, and in the wide margins of that Bible I wrote copious notes that corrected all the commentaries and all the harmonies that I could find in terms of Desire of Ages, the definitive work on all of that. In 1979, I'm director of the Research Centre with the responsibility to make available to anybody that wanted it this document, How the Desire of Ages Was Written. And Ellen White says, "Tell Mary, find me some histories of the Bible that would give me the order of events. I have nothing and can find nothing in the library here." I could read you dozens of illuminating statements from this, but I'll just... And here, Willie White is writing, her son, her chief literary assistant. He's saying, in the order of the chapters, we followed Andrew's harmony as given in his life of Christ. Here I thought God let down to her eyes the definitive analysis of how it all worked. She says, "Please help me." Willie says, "We followed a particular harmony because we thought that was the best." And so I could go on and on with illuminating insights like that that show for 20 years I grievously misused the Desire of Ages. I did it honestly. I preached to my people as well as I could, showing them that this was how it all worked. I should have read page 22, where the theme of the book is given. To know God is to love him. This was a book not about how to solve the difficult questions asked by those who write harmonies of the Gospels and huge volumes of commentaries. It was a book about how to fall in love with Jesus, with God through Jesus Christ. Isn't that a greater use than I had put the book to all of those years? And I could give you dozens of instances where we Adventists have done just that sort of thing because simply we didn't know what the primary sources say. Thirdly, if we understand Ellen White aright, she is not adequately portrayed by the current material on the internet, which can be divided into worshipful and hostile. There are two main streams there, and they don't represent her very well at all. And this was a message that came through loud and clear from our non-Adventist colleagues at the conference. Fourthly, if you read the New York Times Thursday, November 5, you'll notice that Disney is reimagining, rethinking, re-engineering Mickey Mouse. You see, Mickey was a different character when he was born. And then he became a wonderful mouse. So there was the... No, that's not the right word. There was the original Mickey, Then there was the, how can I put it, the sweet Mickey. And now they're about to release the new Mickey, the re-engineered, the rethought, the re-imagined Mickey Mouse. Because this one doesn't go down anymore in the way he used to. He's got to be real. And so here you have the family of words about the redoing that they are engaged in. We have the real Ellen White. Then we have the manufactured Ellen White, who was not a real person. And now we are getting back to the historical Ellen White. And that's the person we need. That is the one who is our church's mother. That's the one who tried to raise us to spiritual adulthood. And there are all kinds of implications. A mother needs to let go, doesn't she? That her children might become truly adult. But we never lose the relationship. We never lose the preciousness of what that mother has done. There were times when she had to command us not to run across the road. But she'll be a different person now that we are adults. So we are learning to understand our heritage. Fifthly, no people that I speak to understand so clearly the destructive effects of civil war as you people. I'm just amazed at the story of what happened back there. Ken Burns says, I think that the Civil War was fought in 10,000 places. I kind of remember that because Australia is said to have 10,000 beaches. But they were beaches of pain and suffering for your forebears. We Adventists are bought into a civil war over our identity and our heritage, and we can do it much better. Dialogue is essential. Dialectic can be very fruitful. Invective is seldom useful, and civil war usually doesn't solve the problems in any sort of effective way. Directly, there are better ways. Let's stop the civil war and learn from our past. Number six, Ellen White needs no defense. She simply needs understanding. And we have such a treasure trove of data that helps us build that understanding. You need to understand in the light of all the known and available historical sources contextualized thoroughly, and that is where the Portland Conference shines. And finally, the next major step forward for Adventist studies and the understanding of Ellen White, this conference was largely focused on the historical Ellen White. We need to hear as thoroughly and as well the biblical scholars, the Old and New Testament specialists that can help us understand how God speaks to us, how he communicates with us. We need to listen to the theologians. You know, theology is faith-seeking understanding. They will help us put the pieces from the Bible and from history together in a coherent theological framework. We need to listen to the sociologists who understand how people behave and how a community validates the work of its leadership and how that relationship develops, what it means. We have such an exciting future in this aspect of our life, and it's been an enormous privilege for me to speak to you on these three occasions. I'm just amazed that ever since I gave my first presentation here, I've had input from all over the world, from people that say, "Oh, I've just discovered this or that that you wrote, or I've just read this, or I've been reading for years, and now I'm communicating with you." This sort of message comes to me from Japan, or the middle of Africa, or Moscow, or America, wherever. As a worldwide family tries to understand who we are, how we got to this point, what our mission is, and how we function as a community in the work of God. I hope that by making this section a bit briefer than Jim allows, that you will have lots of penetrating questions as we come to the second phase of our session, because I'm afraid that what I'm saying mightn't be right where you're asking the questions or hurting or whatever. So I'm looking forward to listening to you as soon as we come back.